Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. We start with the good. And, Jim, we pretty much knew that Jeff Sessions, barring a major shift in his confirmation hearings or anything else, was going to get confirmed because Republicans have the majority, and all that's required to get confirmed now, thanks to Harry Reid and his gang a few years ago, is a simple majority. But as you point out in the Morning Jolt today, the Democrats went about their effort to sink Jeff Sessions all wrong. Instead of going after areas where you might be able to pick off a Republican or two or three, especially in the area of civil forfeiture, which is a growing area of frustration on the right, where the police and others have a right to seize a lot of your assets and then later auction or sell them and make a lot of money. Instead, they went after allegations from 30 years and beyond that he's a racist and so forth, and it just never got any traction. So all they did was reinforce their own disdain for Jeff Sessions and instead of trying to actually win somebody over. You went over the math in the jolt today. This looks like it's pretty much a done deal, and that's great because Jeff Sessions has this crazy idea that the job of the attorney general is to enforce the law.
Crazy thinking there, Greg. Now, I was thinking about this. Let's imagine you're a Senate Democrat and you really believe what you say about Jeff Sessions. Let's say you really deep down think that he is not someone who can be counted on or trusted to enforce the law impartially. Let's say you think that he is driven by you know, racist animus or for whatever reason you think Jeff Sessions becoming attorney general will be not just a little problem, but a major problem. And a serious threat to the country as you know it. If you really believe that, then you start thinking, okay, how do I stop this nomination? And you don't, or how do I stop him from getting 50 votes for confirmation? To do that, you're going to have to persuade Republicans. And so as a result of that, beating the drum and, you know, all the grandstanding that Cory Booker did and all that, that's not going to persuade a Republican senator's mind. That's not going to change their mind. So you got to put your argument in a way that's going to persuade them. And over in the jolt I listed, look, I think Sessions is a pretty good pick. Maybe not if you gave me my choice of everybody in America, the first choice. But, you know, there are a couple areas where some Republicans are not completely on board with him. He's a guy who is no real problem with civil asset forfeiture, which a lot of conservatives started to see as kind of big government run amok and a tool for prosecutors and police that is starting to get seriously abused. He's a staunch supporter of the war on drugs, which isn't that unusual amongst conservatives. What is unusual is that there are a lot of conservatives who look at the war on drugs and say, you know, this is not turning out the way we hoped. National Review made a famous statement about this back in the 1990s. There are certain folks who are just kind of scratching their head and ready for new approaches or something different in dealing with the problem of drugs and addiction. In particular, as we've seen this giant explosion of opioid addiction in lots of small towns in America. Jeff Sessions and his rhetoric on dealing with criminalization of drugs really hasn't adjusted anything there. So conceivably, Republicans might have troubles with that. Or they might have trouble with the fact that there's been a lot of thoughts in conservative circles about criminal justice reform and sentencing reform. This is not being soft on criminals. This is, you know, everybody from Christian conservatives to fiscal hawks to folks looking to say, okay, you have somebody who's young and you send them into prison because you want to punish them for the crime, and they should be punished for the crime. The question is afterwards, what do they do with their lives? Can they go on to become productive, law-abiding members of society? Or do you set them up to fail, where they have this criminal record, they can't get a job, they don't have a support network, they don't have anybody to kind of help them when they're going through rough times in life, they go back onto drugs, all kinds of problems that come along with that. You don't have to be a squishy liberal to start asking the question of whether our criminal justice system is getting the results we want. And Jeff Sessions is very wary of this rethinking, blocked efforts on it last year. So there's three areas that if you're a Republican senator, maybe you're a little worried about Jeff Sessions. Did this come up in the hearings? Yeah, intermittently. It was hard to get any momentum going on those topics, Greg, because every 5 minutes somebody from Code Pink or Black Lives Matter had to stand up and start screaming. And, you know, if you want to persuade Susan Collins, right, you know, you want to persuade Lindsey Graham, right, you want to find some Republican senator who's not 100% on board with the Trump agenda and might have a little bit of wariness about Jeff Sessions. You know, dressing up like Klansmen And calling him racist isn't going to persuade them, because that seems them, you know, that's the typical over the top, obnoxious, incoherent accusations they get from the left. And I remember sitting here thinking, like, you know, deep down, this demonstrates that Democrats don't really think that Jeff Sessions is a threat to law enforcement. They don't really think that he is a threat to democracy, because if he was, they would take it seriously enough to try to persuade their colleagues. And they really didn't. Cory Booker wanted to tape a campaign ad for 2020. And deep down, you know, and if that's it, then fine. Deep down, we know Cory Booker isn't that worried about Jeff Sessions, because if he had, he'd try to persuade Democrats instead of try to showcase how great he is to Democratic primary voters in Iowa and New Hampshire three and a half years from now. So the other intriguing, the reason this is our good martini, Greg, is usually after something like this and in past fights, thinking back to the Bush administration, you could find the Arlen Specters of the world saying, well, I don't know if I can vote for this. Oh, Olympia Snow saying, oh, I'm deeply concerned. Greg, did you see any Republicans saying, I'm not sure if I'm going to vote for Sessions?
Not a one. In fact, Susan Collins helped introduce him.
Right. And of course, Joe Manchin, the West Virginia Democrat, yes, said he's on board with it. You know, Joe Manchin, I think, is going to be Republicans' favorite senator for at least the next 2 years. And with that in mind, I think Sessions' confirmation is you know, all very close to being a done deal. And it's a being a done deal because Democrats can't put aside the desire to placate their base and to play to their base and to actually try to persuade people who think differently than them. And if they continue to do that, then the Republicans and by extension, I think a decent number of conservatives are going to have a lot of wins over the next couple of years.
Yeah, could certainly be the case. And you mentioned Lindsey Graham. One of the first things Jeff Sessions did in his hearing was congratulate Clemson for beating Alabama. So I think that's pretty much a done deal.
Man, he really wants that job. Talk about swallowing your pride.
Yeah, oh, exactly. Cory Booker is going to the extremes. I don't know if you've seen the clip of him in the confirmation hearing for Elaine Chao. He said it was an honor to speak to her, and he said he was upset with Mitch McConnell for not teaching him as a single guy how to marry way out of his league.
Wow. Turned it on. I also believe I saw Booker was not opposed to Tillerson.
That's correct.
Which strikes me as weird. Like, if Jeff Sessions is a threat to democracy and he's going to destroy the rule of law as we know it, and it's the end of everything. But the Exxon guy, yeah, it's cool. Never mind.
All right, on to the bad martini now, and this could possibly be crazy as well. Jim, it's self-congratulatory awards season, not only in the entertainment industry, but also in the political industry. A lot of people last week were rolling their eyes when Ash Carter, who some people in the conservative Twitter think is really the president, gave a special meritorious service medal to President Obama when Obama gave his farewell speech to the troops. Yesterday was tribute day to Joe Biden at the White House, and the big surprise was that Joe Biden got the distinguished version of the Presidential Medal of Freedom that has normally gone out very rarely, but when it does, it goes to people like Mother Teresa and the Apollo 13 astronauts, so go figure out that inclusion for Joe Biden. Biden, of course, didn't see it coming. He was moved, and the media just ate it up like crazy. Here is the folks over at Grabian with their montage, just the first part of it, with the actual reading of the citation with some classic Joe Biden quotes over the years sprinkled in.
Vice President Joseph R. Biden, Jr., in a career of public service spanning nearly half a century, Vice President Joseph R. Biden, Jr., has left his mark on almost every part of our nation.
I'm the vice president of the student body here.
Isn't it a bitch?
Fighting for a stronger middle class.
To state the obvious, the past 6 years have been really, really hard for this country.
A fairer judicial system.
Probably shouldn't say this, but but then again, I'm Joe Biden.
They're going to put you all back in chains.
And a smarter foreign policy.
There's no reason the nation of Africa cannot join the ranks of the world's most prosperous nations.
The nation of Africa has all the opportunities ahead of it. So, Jim, I think if he was the neighbor who worked at the hardware store down the street, he'd be pretty easy to get along with. I will always remember him for his chairman of the Judiciary Committee role in tanking Robert Bork, as well as trying to tank Clarence Thomas. So he can be just as nasty as any other politician when he wants to be. But this whole pat ourselves on the back as the Obama administration departs is getting a little bit ridiculous here.
You know, Greg, you describe him as the wacky neighbor of the Obama administration. And I'm so – he's kind of Kramer. right? Like, he just walks through the door and the audience applauds and laughs because they've just been so conditioned to think of something wacky and unexpected and bizarre and laugh-inducing from Joe Biden. That, in fact, when the more serious Joe Biden gets, the more inclined you are to giggle. Just on the nature of members of an administration giving awards to other members of an administration. You know, apparently William Cohen gave the Defense Medal to Bill Clinton. Robert Gates gave the Defense Medal to George W. Bush. I you know, that escaped my attention back then. But you know what? I think I would have preferred they not do that back then either. You're a president. You're going to get a lot of awards. You're going to get a lot of accolades. Your life is going to be terrific. Don't take the civilian award. Your commander in chief, it comes with the job. There's got to be somebody else out there. Give it to the guy who's a civilian but who works really hard in the Pentagon cafeteria, right? Find somebody else, because otherwise, you know, it comes to the person you appointed, the person you gave the job, saying, "Great job, boss." And most of us outside that process are going to kind of roll our eyes and say it comes across as you know, butt kissing or boot licking or something like that. And I just don't like that. And for, you know, Obama giving the award to Biden, you know, Biden is a guy who has been through some really awful tragedies in life. I think outside of the realm of politics, yeah, maybe you can say he's really an extraordinary human being to be able to go on after, you know, losing members of his family in ways that you never want to lose anybody. Does he rank up there with the Apollo 13 astronauts or Mother Teresa or any of these figures? I think it's very strongly debatable, and it just comes across, as I said, self-congratulatory. And here's the thing. If there was any message coming out of this this past election, it's that people in the heartland, people in middle America flyover states are really tired of people in Washington talking about what a great job they're doing because they don't see it. They don't feel it. They don't think they're doing such a great job. So it just comes across as kind of affirming every bad stereotype about Washington being self-absorbed and smug and too proud of themselves and things like that. And it, I'm not surprised the Obama administration is closes on this note. I don't have enormously high hopes that the Trump administration will behave differently. But I just think people in office, when they're given – when they're offered or named an exceptionally high award, that they should have the humility to say, you know, there are other people who deserve this more than I do. I don't know if that means you actually decline it or whether you just kind of try to put it over. But it felt like, you know, it's a good closing note, Greg, for an administration that basically got the Nobel Peace Prize on, you know, 4 months into office.
Yeah, there's two reactions to this that I like, neither of which came from me. One that I've seen a lot this morning is that apparently the Presidential Medal of Freedom in the distinguished version is the ultimate participation trophy. The other one is from a coworker who said, "You know who loves to give medals to each other? The Russians."
If we're going to give Tillerson grief for getting that medal from Putin, you know. Although there's another one, you could turn it down.
Exactly. Like,
I got to wash my hair that night, Mr. President. I'm out. Sorry.
Oh, well, we started with confirmation hearings with Jeff Sessions and the good martini. Let's end with confirmation hearings and the crazy martini. Mike Pompeo is a congressman from Kansas, very well respected. He is the president-elect's choice to be the next director of the CIA. He had his confirmation hearing yesterday. There's a brand new senator from the state of California. It's so good to have Barbara Boxer gone. But Kamala Harris, formerly the attorney general of California, does not appear to be shaping up to be any better. If you're thinking about all the different things that the CIA and the intelligence community have got to keep on top of, there's a long list of threats out there. But here's what Kamala Harris is interested in, and you got to love Mike Pompeo's response.
CIA Director Brennan, who spent a 25-year career at the CIA as an analyst, a senior manager, and station chief in the field, has said that when, quote, CIA analysts look for deeper causes of rising instability in the world, one of the causes those CIA analysts see is the impact of climate change. Do you have any reason to doubt the assessment of these CIA analysts?
Senator Harris, I haven't had a chance to read those materials with respect to climate change. I do know the agency's role there. Its role is to collect foreign intelligence, to understand threats to the world. That would certainly include threats from poor governance, regional instability, threats from all sources, and deliver that information to policymakers. And To the extent that changes in climatic activity are part of that foreign intelligence collection task, we will deliver that information to you all and to the president.
See, Trump could take a big lesson from this, Jim, because Trump would have responded by probably saying, you're an idiot. That's the really polite diplomatic way of saying you're an idiot.
Well, I was going to say there are a lot of ways, and no one will ever nominate Jim Garrity to be director of the Central Intelligence Agency. But the day that happens, and I get that question from multi-term Senator Harris, you know what my response will be, Greg?
What?
Sure, why not? Will you read these reports saying global warming? Yeah, sure. Sure, I'll read them. No problem. Will you act on them? Yeah, sure. Senator Harris, whatever you want to hear from me, let's just pretend I said it and move on, okay? You know I don't really care about this. I know you really care about this. I know you're probably not going to vote for me anyway. But if you do, even if you vote for me, the first time I do something you don't like, you could turn around and denounce me. Everything we're doing here is kabuki theater. Fought, whatever, right? Basically, I would fold my arms and say, sure, whatever, to anything any senator said. Because wasn't there some other topic she brought up, Greg?
Probably. What was it?
It was the family leave policies for gay and lesbian employees. And you know what? Do I think gay and lesbian employees should have the same family? Yes, sure. Whatever. Whatever it if they're really good at analyzing stuff, give them everything every other employee gets. Fine. Whatever. I'm here to kill ISIS. Okay. I came here to chew some bubblegum and kill terrorists, and I'm all out of bubblegum. Okay. I don't want to get dragged into any of your social justice warrior topics. I don't think Angelina Jolie gets typecast. No, I don't. I did not see the Ghostbusters reboot. Any other topics setting social media afire, I don't care. I'm just here to protect Americans and gather intelligence on stuff. So the fine whatever policy would be my course of action in all confirmation hearings.
Oh, man. She went on then to ask if he had read specific reports from NASA talking about climate change and that sort of thing. And eventually the conversation ended like this.
So I'm not clear. Do you believe that NASA's findings are debatable?
Senator, I have to tell you, I haven't spent enough time to tell you that I've looked at NASA's findings in particular. I can't give you any judgment about that today.
Can you guarantee me that you will, and we'll have a follow-up conversation on this?
I'm happy to continue to talk about it. Yes, ma'am, of course.
Jim, this reminds me of that credit card commercial where the couple has the date. At first they say, we had a really nice time, and then they say, I'll call you. And actually, I'll send you a text in a couple of days, and be really vague about my level of interest. And the woman says, yeah, and it'll take me a couple of days to respond. And finally they say, we're never going to see each other again, are we? That's the political version of that.
Yeah, I salute Director-designate Pompeo. It's very close to the Garrity find whatever approach. Will we talk about this again? Yeah, sure. Sure, we'll talk about it again. You'll probably get the same kind of answers you're getting from me now, but I will feign enthusiasm to discussing this with you further, Senator. Is NASA's findings debatable? Senator, people debate anything. Doesn't mean it's a good debate. Doesn't mean it's a valid debate. Doesn't mean that both sides are equally compelling or well-articulated or anything like that. But yeah, people are going to debate it. But I will say whatever you want to hear me to say to get this part of the questioning over so we can get back to any topic that I actually care about, like killing terrorists and protecting Americans and stuff like that. Does any other senator have any questions on anything relating to actual intelligence work? Anyone at all? No? Okay, I guess we're done here. Thank you. Good night.
Oh, Jim, given your track record, I'm sure Trump's probably not going to nominate you anything.
But for
anyone listening who will eventually become a Republican president someday, or possibly even a Democrat, you have just heard why you should nominate Jim Garrity for something, because the confirmation hearing will be absolutely fabulous.
I'm trying to think of it's probably better visually, the sheer, nonchalant shrug, Garrity, do you agree that within 30 years, lower Manhattan will be entirely underwater? Shrug. I guess. Is that what you're thinking? Yeah, sure. Yeah, that could happen. I'm selling real estate now.
I especially want to see you in round three of the questioning when you've already been there 6 or 7 hours.
A lot of rubbing the eyes, particular finger. Yes.
Oh, man. I think a lot of people would pay to see that. Jim, have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you Monday.
See you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today, and be sure to tune in again on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.